It is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 115. I am your host, Adam Mandem. I'm joined first by Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars on KSL. We talk about what the coaching staff might be able to do to keep Taysom Hill on the field this season. We also talk about what the offense may look like come 30 days from now when they play the University of Virginia, and also the trials and tribulations of scheduling bowl games as an independent. Matt, my brother, comes on to talk about Cougars in the NFL, including the disappointing news about Dennis Pitta. Also, we talk scheduling, and we preview the entire defensive unit and express our comfort levels for the defensive backs, the linebackers, and the defensive line, respectively. Again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can download us on iTunes, and you should. You can follow us at vanquishthefoe.com and get a lot of good stuff there. And of course, you're going to listen to us right now. It is the Rise and Shout Podcast, and we are welcoming back our friend, the voice of the Cougars, Greg Rebell. Greg, welcome back to the podcast.
Adam, thank you very much. Are you keeping track? What number is this?
This is number 15 for you.
Am I still in first place?
Oh yeah, your lead has widened. You're a couple ahead of Jay now, so I think you're in pretty good shape, at least for the foreseeable future.
Let me know when he really starts to threaten. All right.
I will definitely, and everyone else, Brandon Gurney and other folks we have on frequently, they've only got 7 or 8, so it's going to take them years. They'll have to start calling me and asking to be on the podcast, which would be a first, actually. So we haven't had John for a little bit over the summer, as you've kind of been on vacation and we've kind of been on vacation. But as we were talking before the podcast started recording, your vacation is over, and
right.
Now football season is staring us in the face. So let's which is a good thing. A month away about from the start of the season. So let's start with Taysom Hill. We got a question on Twitter that I thought was a good one that I think will kind of start our conversation. This is from Tanner Wallace. That's at RTWall30 on Twitter. He asks, how will the coaches use Taysom's running ability without getting him hurt? And I've heard this many times from other fans I've talked to and have had the same concern myself. We talked about this a little last season that he got injured on kind of a freak play. But how do they balance that, Greg, between using that awesome running ability he has but not exposing him to the kind of hits that a running quarterback sometimes can take that might lead to injury?
Well, I think that Taysom Hill's play on which he was injured last year is instructive, just as was the play on which Riley Nelson got injured, in which he initially got hit in the back against Weber State that caused a fractured vertebrae. Now, you might recall, what kind of plays were both of those plays for the quarterback? They were draws.
Right.
Right? And a quarterback draw will often put you in the most harm's way. Okay, you're going to be running into the teeth of the defense for the most part. And even though the play on which Taysom Hill scored a 68-yard touchdown against Hawaii was, if I'm not mistaken, I think a delayed draw. I don't think there was a scramble element to it. I'd have to go back and watch, but I felt like it was more delayed draw than anything else, but I could be off on that. But either way, certainly the Utah State play and Riley Nelson's play against Weber State were kind of designed quarterback draws that expose you, I think, to the most harm. And so I think the answer to his question is, how can you utilize Taysom Hill's talents without getting him hurt? I think it comes into the style and kind of runs you have him go on. I don't think the quarterback draw is the most effective use of Taysom Hill's talents, his ability to burst through a hole and take off against Hawaii notwithstanding. And a zone read type of play or setup or action or indeed quarterback does give the quarterback a little more flexibility in terms of whether he puts himself in harm's way or where he puts himself. And generally speaking, on zone read type play, a quarterback will only keep when he sees space, when he sees the opening, when he sees that he's got room to run. And I think that the way that Nevada, ran Colin Kaepernick and I haven't seen enough Nevada film with Cody Fajardo to judge, but I'd have to imagine it's fairly similar. A lot of what Colin Kaepernick did was direct his runs toward the sideline. He'd see space downfield. He'd make as much north-south yardage as he could before veering to the sideline and avoiding a hit altogether. And Broncos frequently said, you know, Colin Kaepernick would smile at you as you approached him because he knew that he was getting out of bounds before you could get to him. And those are smart runs and productive runs. And I'm hoping that Taysom Hill, that most of his runs come maybe in that vein, where he's running to space and getting himself clear of a physical contact. And not that he can't take a hit. And, you know, Tim Tebow was known for his ability to take a hit and deliver a blow, too, at the size he is and was. And Taysom Hill's no shrinking violet, but I think by the same token, you know, risking losing him for an extended period of time is a risk you don't need to take if you call plays the right way. And Robert and I was part of an offense last year at Arizona that I think utilized their QB in a way they'd like to utilize Taysom Hill. His running talents are too good to not use, but I think it's really a matter of the direction in which you use them. And I mean both literally and figuratively on that one.
Yeah. No. And let's go back a little bit to bigger picture offense. We talked about this a little last time we had you on a few months ago, but what is the offense going to be like? I mean, I think because of the limited exposure that fans get in spring and the fact that they're not likely to reveal everything in any type of public fashion in spring, especially when you're putting in a new offense, what do we expect against Virginia? Is it going to be Oregon? Is it going to be something, you know, between Oregon and what Anai has run in the past? You know, what kind of offense should fans expect in that first game?
Well, I think it would probably resemble as much Arizona as Oregon, or a combination thereof. I mean, it is the biggest difference between Robert and I now and Robert and I then was his exposure to Rich Rodriguez and his way of calling a game and his style of offensive football. But you know, what one of the beauties of openers is that the opponent need not know exactly what you're going to do, and the way BYU run summer camp or August camp in terms of the exposure that it gives the media during observation periods also will play into it. I don't know that BYU has to show anybody much of anything before Virginia.
Right.
You know, we can speculate and surmise, but I think in a lot of ways, until we see it, we really can't judge what we expect to see. And again, I think that in camp, and you know, BYU would be simply mirroring a national trend of curtailing, you know, access, and it's wise in a lot of ways. I mean, what you are doing, especially with a system that hasn't been run yet at BYU, is you're giving the opposition a sense or a good taste of, you know, both, you know, main players and indeed some of the plays they may choose to run. And it's all football, and after a week people see what they need to see going forward. But at least for this opener, I don't know that we're going to head into Charlottesville with a 100% idea of what a Robert and I offense will look like and until we see it. And in a lot of ways it's exciting, in some ways it's frustrating, and in other ways it's to be expected when you in this environment when you know competitive advantage is such an important factor of trying to keep as much hidden as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So going to this season, you tweeted out a couple of things today about, and we're recording this on Thursday night, you tweeted out a couple of things about the schedule and some interesting facts about how many preseason ranked opponents that will be facing, Cougars will be facing this year. What is your take on this schedule from a historic perspective? I think our natural inclination as fans to hyperbole makes us want to say it's the toughest schedule ever. And it's hard to say that in advance because sometimes teams are tougher or easier than you thought at the beginning of the season. But what's your take on this schedule just from what we know? Is this the toughest schedule ever? Is it one of the toughest? Or is it one of those unanswerable questions that I should get back to you in January?
Well, to the extent that it features the greatest collective win percentage from 2012, in a 2013 slate, then we could say it's BYU's toughest ever. Again, that's their 2012 performance taken collectively says that's the best group of teams that BYU's ever had to face the following season. So I guess we can qualify it and say that, you know, based on the previous season's record as an aggregate, it's the toughest slate that BYU's had to face going into the next season. But of course, that next season now being upon us has to be played out before we can judge, you know, if it really was or was not. I mean, when BYU beat Oklahoma in 2009, they were ranked third, and they weren't that team at the end of the season. And of right. course, BYU had a lot to do with that by knocking Sam Bradford out of the game. But, you know, so a preliminary judgment, as long as you qualify it, is valid. And then, you know, the real judgment will have to wait until the end of the season. And it's interesting that BYU, in 2009 had a lot to do about how Oklahoma played the rest of its season. And so there are those qualifiers that come into play as well. But what I think more than whether saying toughest or not toughest is how many weeks you have to go through the season until you find a game that doesn't intrigue you. You know, and it's tough to do that in this year's schedule. I mean, you know, Virginia has the natural appeal by being the opener on the road in the first game of Robert and I's second tenure with an all-new offensive staff. That one speaks for itself. The Texas game is, again, you know, self-evident in its importance by how good Texas is and their ranking and their talent and experience. Utah, again, needs no explanation. Middle Tennessee, you might say, okay, well, there's our first dip game. There's the first game where you're like, eh, okay, that's a game you win. And then you go back and you see what Middle Tennessee did in Atlanta last year. They went into Georgia Tech and just stomped the Yellow Jackets. And so now you're saying, okay, maybe that's the team I don't overlook. Next game is Utah State. Well, as you know, as close as Utah State was to the BCS last season, and as well as they've played BYU of late, and the fact that BYU's last trip up there was a loss, there's all kinds of natural intrigue for that game. Georgia Tech, the very next week. Again, there's a team that BYU shut down, and you know that Paul Johnson has spent the, you know, better part of the ensuing year wondering just how it was that BYU did to his team what the Cougars did. And so there's a highly motivated Yellow Jackets team. You know, then you go play Houston, a game, again, you expect to win, but Houston's only been one of the best offensive teams in college football over the last number of years, and you're playing in an NFL stadium there. The Boise game could be, you know, to stay in the BCS race. The Wisconsin game with Gary Anderson puts you in Big Ten country in November. Idaho State's that maybe the first breather game you have all year where you say, that game has no intrigue to me. Because then you're back at Notre Dame, and you finish at Nevada, which has one of the most underrated players, or maybe not even by then, but one of the best players, I think, in the country, in Cody Fajardo. So where in that schedule do you find, you know, the game or stretch of games that don't interest you? I mean, so record or, you know, record or strongest or not strongest or toughest or not toughest, I just think it's the most interesting and intriguing and appealing schedule that BYU could have ever put together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's it will be one that, as you said, even some of the games that look on the surface to potentially be uninteresting can and should be interesting.
And Adam, it's a you know, of course, if you were in a conference race, you could assign meaning to all kinds of games, depending on who's playing well in league and how close you are to a title. But, you know, when you're not in a league, you know, this is really the best you could hope for, is to compile a schedule, again, that has balance and intrigue and appeal all the way from the month of August through the month of November, and then ideally into December in a bowl game. So, again, kudos to Tom Holmo. And BYU fans will be well served this year. We only hope that the team plays well enough to make, you know, that intrigue last into October and November.
No, absolutely. And that leads very well into the next question, which is bowl games, Craig, because one of the things, obviously, that's come out of all of this from Independence as a football team is some really interesting regular season matchups and a lot of intrigue as far as announcements go on who's going to be next, who are we going to schedule, and great programs like Wisconsin and Texas and other programs where we get to face them a couple of times. The one thing that seems to be the big unknown, and maybe there's something in the works longer term, is that bowl situation, which it seems kind of now it's year by year, and with all the conferences locking up some of the mid-range bowls. It seems to be a little bit more difficult. So as a fan just watching it with no inside knowledge, it seems like it's potentially harder than the administration anticipated. But maybe that's not true. So I'd love your perspective on, is it harder than they anticipated? And do you think that this is something that just is going to, you know, every couple of years we'll hear an announcement for the next couple of years, but it's going to be bit by bit going forward?
I would lean to the latter, and I would say that Tom Holmoe's hope, if not expectation, was that with the conclusion of the BCS, that the next round of a college football postseason, which is now the college football playoff, would feature a bowl setup that was less like the old system with locked conference tie-ins, but that wasn't the case. What, you know, Tom Holmoe's hope was that it would loosen up and allow for more flexibility. But in reality, what has happened is essentially a duplication of the previous setup. And so I think Tom faces a certain blunt reality in that standpoint that basically what happened before will happen again. That is, the leagues will lock up bowls to fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth place. And while BYU does have, again, an agreement with the Poinsettia Bowl for 2015 and other years moving forward, I think where BYU is going to be, you know, probably best served, and this hasn't been made official at all, is as a contingency team. There will be leagues that can't fulfill their bowl obligations. And on those years, I would hope at least that there could be a sliding up in the order within those leagues, opening spots in the, you know, I guess you'd say the bottom part of that pecking order for a team like BYU to slip in. Whether or not it's formalized before the season, I would hope that BYU involves itself in those discussions during and after the season as a contingency team. The reality is conferences lock up their teams for the best bowl games, and BYU and Army and Navy, and well, what won't apply to Navy much longer, but our Army, beg your pardon, but BYU as an independent does find itself in kind of that postseason limbo that is just, again, a blunt reality. You have to do the best for what you can, and that's just, you know, a fact of life as an independent right now. I mean, even Notre Dame, I think, is in a BCS or bust situation this year, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure they have a home if they don't go to the BCS this year. And again, right, you know, I expect things to open up for Notre Dame, obviously, somewhere, somehow. But I think they go into the year without a deal except for the BCS. So it even happens to a team like Notre Dame, things got gobbled up, and that's just, again, a certain reality. But I guess it all depends on, you know, what the importance is you place on bowl games. I think it's important to get to a 13th game, and if you're going to get to that game, it's great that you win those games, as BYU's now done 4 years in a row. But if you're not playing in a BCS game or a college football playoff game, it is really just a 13th game. And you know, there's greater meaning assigned to the four or five or now six games that really matter. And unless you're in one of those, it's just another game. And I hope that people don't get too wound up about bowl game possibilities, because again, after those top bowls, it's just a game that you hope to get against a good opponent, to end your season the right way. So I think BYU will always have a place to play. But in this whole scenario of independence, it's the one that you have the least control over, on a year-to-year basis. And that's probably tough, you know, for probably Tom and others to have to deal with, knowing that, you know, there's a certain ceiling that we bump into before we can't go any further.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, it's not totally, dissimilar from being in a conference where, you know, you never knew ahead of time where you were going to finish in the conference. You had an idea if you finished first or second or third in the Mountain West, what bowl game you would go to. But at the beginning of the year, your ability to predict that is pretty low, and fans had to wait then too. So not totally different. Well, Greg, you now have a firm three-game lead on Jay. We appreciate you coming on. It's good to have you on. Anything you want to tell us that's coming up on KSL or your preseason coverage that you want to alert our listeners to?
Well, I guess I would just say that, I'll cover camp, to the best of my ability this year. It might be a little different than previous years because, again, things are getting tougher, I think, in terms of what teams will show the media, but understandably so. So I may be curtailed a little bit, you know, that way, but I think fans will understand that, that we're doing the best we can with the access we get. And of course, I look forward to this time of year to creating those Cougar tracks and putting as much detail as I can. But, this may be a year where there's a little less detail and a little more, knowledge gained from interviews, if you will. I'm just not sure how much we'll get to see this year compared to previous years, but that's all to be determined, I think, still. And you know, it's still a great time, and I look forward to it every year. Again, people can follow me on Cougar Tracks at KSL.com for those camp reports. And, of course, Twitter is always a good place to find what's going on with me and with BYU, and that's at Greg Grubel on Twitter. It's kind of, you know, that's kind of the standard situation for me. And then, of course, before you know it, we'll be back on the air, and we'll be from Charlottesville, Virginia on August 31st with the Cougars and the Cavaliers, and season openers are always an exciting time. And the way BYU's played them, you look at them, they've won six in a row right now.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome. So
BYU always gets off to the right start under Bronco. You hope that they can, you know, maybe this year carry it through a few additional weeks and get that national buzz going for BYU football, because the schedule's there to really put BYU on the map if they can get off to a strong start. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, same here. And we'll, of course, Chris, follow you on Twitter and follow the Cougar Tracks as the camp goes on. So thanks, Greg, again for coming on the podcast, and we'll have you on again soon.
Adam, thanks very much. Anytime you ask, I'm happy to come on, and hopefully we'll talk to you about BYU's successful start to the season here in a few weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks, Greg. Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. What's going on, dude?
Just football. Football is all that is going on.
Yes, we are, as of this recording, we are 30 days away from kickoff.
I can barely contain myself.
3-0, less than a month, dude.
I can't focus on anything. I can't stay focused on anything for longer than 30 seconds.
Well, that's always true, isn't it?
I guess that's true. That's just a general statement. But what I'm getting at is I can't stop thinking about football.
The source of your distraction now is not soda or Twinkies. It's
I don't know that
football.
Twinkies. Wait a minute. Were Twinkies? What are you talking about? I don't know that Twinkies ever qualified as a source of my distraction.
I don't know. I was trying to come up with something.
What are something. You talking about?
I don't know. People love Twinkies.
Who
don't
loves
people love Twinkies?
Twinkies? People love the Twinkies are back. They were out
the
for a little
are
while.
Back.
They're back
Everybody
in
loves
action.
Twinkies.
That is exciting. It's a little bit like the yearly football hiatus.
Okay, fine. Not Twinkies, but let me share with you what sometimes distracts me.
Wow, here we go.
Are you ready?
Oh, boy. I don't even want to know what
that is. A fully caffeinated, fully sugared Dr. Pepper, my friend.
Wow. Hey, do you know what's really good? I've been drinking a lot of are the Mountain Dew Kickstart.
Oh, you're.
I can't stop putting that stuff back. It's delicious.
Oh, you're crazy.
It's so good.
Is it sugar free?
No, but it's, you know, it's in a larger can, only 80 calories per can.
You say no as if that's a bad thing to me. Sugar-free means Adam doesn't drink it. So.
Oh, and no, it's not. It's not sugar-free.
Sweet.
But it is a pretty low-calorie drink. It's got 5% juice. It's like juice, when they dehydrate it or whatever. It's like juice powder. It's not. I don't think they're really pouring like fresh
you mean
it's, orange
yeah,
juice.
Yeah, they're not squeezing oranges into the can.
I don't think so. But,
probably not.
But it is delicious. I'd probably drink one a day, if not two.
So Matt, on our last podcast, not to switch topics.
I think I might have to go get one right now.
Mainly because I don't care about what you're talking about.
I'm gonna stop listening because I think I'm gonna go. I may
stop.
My headset.
We've got an intro.
Oh, sorry.
We've got an intro. Last week we had EA Sports, a producer of the NCAA EA Sports 14 football game. The next day, the announcement comes out that this is the last game.
Awkward.
Now, I didn't even think to mention or ask him about it, mainly because we're a fan podcast, right? We don't do, like, confrontational interviewing, typically.
No.
You and I, yes, but not with our special guest. But I knew that lawsuit was going on, so, but I decided not to ask him about it. I did not realize they were about to the next day announced that this was going to be the last one. So, Matt, tell us about your experience. You went out and you bought the game. What is going on in your world of NCAA 14 and the BYU Cougars?
I can't stop playing that game. So I'm in a dynasty. I'm in the 2014 season, but we'll back up a little bit and we'll kind of recap 2013.
Yes, briefly, because I'm already falling asleep.
It was a weird season. I'm just going to say that.
Mm.
I ended the year 10-3. My three losses were Georgia Tech.
You're terrible.
Notre Dame.
Okay.
And then Stanford in the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl.
Ah, Stanford in the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl.
Could not get the offense off the ground against Notre Dame or Stanford. I felt like a Riley Nelson, actually. I've got a back injury, as you may know.
I do, but our listeners may not.
I'll go ahead and throw this out there. I had surgery done on my back last week, which is why I've got a lot of time to play video games right now. And so when I played the Georgia Tech game, I was laying flat on my back and I had a really awkward angle at the television. Could not defend the option. I should have just shut the game off. I should have followed the advice I gave Riley Nelson back in the day, taken off the jersey and gone and hid in the locker room. But I finished the game anyway and I lost it. And that's kind of what happened against Stanford. Notre Dame was, the wheels came off. I have no excuse for that one. But those other two losses, I played injured when I shouldn't. Anyway, threw a lot of interceptions in the red zone also in that first season.
You got to the red zone. That's very different though than 2012.
Easy now. You're talking about me?
No, I'm talking about actual BYU Cougars in 2012.
And then, so far here in the 2014 season, I think I'm ranked 8. And I just finished the run in the schedule of Virginia, Utah State, and Houston. The games are kind of out of order for that schedule. I couldn't get them in the right order, but I got most of the schedule right. So far undefeated. So beat Texas, next game is Boise State.
Excellent, excellent. Well, good luck to you in your season. And
it becomes like, and I know a lot of people are like this, it becomes like a real world when you get into those and you start playing the dynasty.
I know, you're talking like it's a real world.
It is the real world. And I'm excited about a couple of players that we're going to talk about on the podcast right now because of the way that they've performed on NCAA 14.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's not good. But I will tell you this. If my wife was here, I'd let she would come in and say, it's not real, Matt.
It is real. Tell her that it is. It is to me.
It is to you. Well, Matt, let's shift gears here and talk about something that is both serious and highly unfortunate. The news has come down that Dennis Pitta, former BYU Cougar Dennis Pitta, plays for the Super Bowl champion. Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
He is injured and will be out for the season with a hip injury. Just terrible. I mean, he was people were saying he was going to be a featured weapon for Joe Flacco now that Anquan Boldin had left the Ravens. Just a terrible, terrible situation. Pitta and, you know, Colley still looking for a job. Two of the best receiving weapons in recent BYU history, both good NFL talents, but one of them definitely won't be on the field in 2013, and one of them, I don't know that we'll ever see Colley again in the NFL, but thoughts?
Yeah, Colley's in a really tough spot with the injuries and with the concussions, and I think that that's making a lot of teams nervous about him. Clearly, the talent was there when he was healthy. The talent, the hands, the route running may all still be there, but the danger in, you know, what happens if he takes another hit like that again is seriously damaging his prospects. Dennis Pitta's injury, as far as, you know, the way I look at it, the way I'm looking at Dennis Pitta's injury is this could have been much worse. And the initial reports that I saw, it looked like it was going to be much worse than it turned out. Which is good news. I mean, he still is going to lose a season, and I believe this is a contract year for Dennis Pitta. So at the end of this season, you know, the Ravens will either re-sign him or he's going to be testing the free agent market, which really would have been a great – it seemed like the stars had really aligned. As you talked about, he was going to be more of a featured weapon in the offense. Flacco clearly likes to throw to him, and he's been a very good talent there for them. And the ability to put up some really big numbers in the last year of his contract would have given him an opportunity to sign probably the only really big contract of his whole career.
That
opportunity is now lost. I mean, he'll sign a contract most likely. I think Dennis Pitta comes back and plays again. I don't know that it's in Baltimore, but it's not going to be for the kind of money that it would have been had he been able to play this year. If he had just like a light him up season, but zero stats and coming off of an injury is going to make him a lot less valuable to the market.
Yep, absolutely. So Matt, in the NFL, there are, according to ESPN, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yes, this counting is fascinating for the listeners. 11 former BYU players on NFL rosters. The most notable, of course, were Pitta, as well as Ziggy Ansah, who was, of course, we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast. Looking at the rest of the Cougars out there, John Denny, Fangupo, Fuga, Kavinga, Keel, Kiesel, both Reynolds, Soto, and Unga. Anybody on that list where you think they're going to make an impact this year? As I look across the list, besides Ansah, of course, I see some guys that were good NFL players who are getting old, like Kiesel.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see some young guys that have either it's their first year or they have yet to really break in regularly in an NFL rotation. Anybody there that sticks out to you as somebody that you think might have a good NFL 2013?
There's one guy that I really like, and that's Hebron Fangupo. There's a couple reasons here. One is I think he's in the right place. You know, one of the names you mentioned is somebody, a BYU guy that's been around a long time. And I don't, what phrase did you use when you're talking about Kiesel?
Old.
Okay. So Kiesel is older, all right? He's older than he was a year ago, which I guess we all are. But Fangupo's in a place where there's a little bit of a history of BYU defensive linemen contributing on that team. You know, and I'm really just talking about two people, Chris Hoke and Brett Kiesel.
Yes, you are just talking about two people. But there is some history.
But there is some history there, and I think it's a system that should work well for him. I expect him to have some opportunity there because of the dynamics of that defensive line. Part of that is that Kiesel's getting on in years. And the other thing is he's a big, really nice guy. He was actually in my elder scorm last summer in Houston. I'd love to see him do well. And I think that Pittsburgh may be the place for that. So if I were to pick one off of the list you gave me, that's the one I would come up with.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Kiesel, for as much as I just made fun of him for being old, he's really not. I mean, 34 for the NFL is not young. But, you know, he did have his the second most sacks he's ever had last season.
Yeah, he's not slowing down. As a matter of fact, if he listens to the podcast, he may come and find you and kill you.
Well, I'm older than he is, so I mean, when I say old, I mean that with the utmost respect, Brett, and I love your beard.
He's the man. He really is. Very talented football player.
Yeah, he's a fantastic, and quite frankly, was one that when he was drafted in the 7th round by Pittsburgh, you know, 12 years ago, I don't think anybody, even, you know, blue-colored glass BYU fans anticipated this type of long, productive NFL career.
No, I think that he, as a football player, he peaked at a better time when it was worth a lot more money.
Yes, he did. And he was good in college, but he definitely has become something else in the pros. So, you know, as we've talked about, we both think Ansah's going to make an impact this year, so we won't belabor that. Matt, in other news for the Cougars, there was a couple of scheduling announcements since we last talked. Let's tackle them one at a time. Utah State series is extended. Your thoughts?
I think it's great to extend the series with Utah State. I think it's an important game to play. It's good for recruiting. It's good.
You sound a lot like a politician. Exposure.
No, I really, I don't have, I know there's some people who are down on the Utah State series. And
some
I'm not.
Fans don't.
I like it. I think it's a cool game to play. I like the fact that there's a giant wagon wheel that, for the most part, just sits in the Marriott Center. that's fun. And I think as an independent program, and I believe I said this before, it is important to have a few teams that we play almost every year. And, you know, I have a short list of teams I'd like to see that become. Notre Dame's on that list, and Utah State is on that list. Just because I feel like the Utah State one makes sense and it's easy.
And San Diego State.
No, that's just. Do they still even have a football team?
They might.
The only reason I think that it works well for Utah State, the big one is you schedule them the weekend of general conference and you play them on Friday night.
But we're not going to do that. Two of these games are, which I think is great, is two of these games are in November. Which I think is terrific.
Which is great, too, right? I mean, it either way, it fills holes. It's a program that I think wants to play us, and we don't have to worry about trying to work out some, like, two there and one home deal, any of that kind of negotiating. You just
no, it should be one for one with Utah State.
I absolutely agree. It should be one for one. I agree. But that one's easy. That one's an easy conversation to have. I don't think they expect a two for one, obviously. And I think they'll play us as much as they can fit it into their schedule. I think they'll always play us.
Yeah, I think so. It's good for them. It's good for us. I like it. I know some fans don't. Quite frankly, I'm not going to call you dumb or anything because you think that way, though I may think it. I'm not going to say it out loud. No.
But you kind of just did.
Don't worry. I can always edit. No, seriously, I just don't. I don't understand why. I mean, it's kind of as an independent, it's a given. I understand why we stopped playing them for a while with a packed conference schedule and trying to get some better out-of-conference games. But now it seems to be a very beneficial arrangement for both programs. I agree with you. So the other announcement, Matt, was, I don't know if it was unexpected. At least for me it was a little unexpected, though it was a team that I actually had thought about. Maybe that's a team we could schedule a series with, Fresno State. So what are your thoughts on the announcement with Fresno?
Decent. I mean, I'm not over, you know, overly excited about the Fresno State series necessarily. No, I mean, it's okay. It's really how I feel about it.
It's super, super exciting.
It's not like really exciting, but I'm not real disappointed about it either. I mean, it's about there. We need games like this on the schedule is really what it comes down to. And you know, they're easier to schedule and probably deal with than some other people, you know, and I think we're going to play, you know, a handful of people, you know, out of these same conferences. So, you know, when you talk about the WAC and the Mountain West.
Yep.
And so I think that, and it's a game in California. And I think we like those for recruiting reasons.
Sure. Why not?
And it's a winnable game.
It is all of those things, and it sets up the November 2015, not to be like a spectacular end of the year, but you have UNLV, who knows what they'll be then, in Vegas, and then home game with Fresno State, and then Thanksgiving weekend game, if I'm doing my math right, against Utah State in Logan. So it's not a bad November. It's not like this past November, right, where we're playing, you know, it felt like really lackluster opponents. At least these guys should be decent.
And they're real teams.
They're real teams, and
I mean,
one of them is a rival.
State.
Right. One of them, Utah State, is a rivalry, too.
And that is cool to get that rivalry, and that is one point that we kind of, I guess we could touch on, is it is cool to get that rivalry-type game around the end of November.
Yeah, sure.
That's cool to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm more into, you know, making sure we got good games than making sure they're rivalries, right? I mean, but historically, you know, that's when a lot of the biggest rivalries are played. So
that's when we've always played Utah.
And I think, unfortunately, this last November got people kind of jaded on November stinks. This November is going to get people, their expectations are going to, I think, be too high going forward because we're not going to have at Wisconsin, at Notre Dame, and at Nevada, that kind of November probably ever again. I mean, that's a lot of things, you know, aligning for that to happen.
Yeah.
So let's talk, Matt. We have there's a Twitter question that leads kind of the next thing that's semi-scheduling related. It's from Justin Thornton. That's at Justin Thornton on Twitter. He asks, Royal Blue Uni, awesome or awesome-er? And he is, of course, there was a tweet out from BYU Athletics that they will be wearing the throwbacks, including my favorite picture, which had Tom Homo in his 55 jersey and Robbie Bosco in his number 6 jersey from their days as BYU Cougars. So, Matt, to answer Justin's question, awesome or awesome-er?
I'm going to go with awesome-er. I wish they'd wear the royal blue every weekend. I wish they would just go back to it.
We need to stop agreeing so much because that will become annoying.
But I do. I think it's great. You know, and I also think it helps them sell product, which is just from a business standpoint, just kind of makes sense. People will buy the royal blue stuff. They love it. You know, as long as they can get good stuff available. And there's been a lot on Twitter this week about BYU gear.
Yes.
There's been a lot of conversation about that. But I think the Royal Blue provides an opportunity for some cooler stuff to be made and a little bit of throwback stuff. You go back to that hat that Taysom Hill wore during that news conference. Everybody went bonkers over it, right? People love that stuff.
I may or may not have bought that hat.
I had just bought it like a week before, but not the white paneled one, the one that was blue all the way around. I love that hat.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got one of those T-shirts, blue, Royal Blue T-shirts with the with the old school cougar with his little cap on his head.
I think a lot of fans would love to go back to the royal blue. I don't think that'll ever happen, but I think it'd be pretty cool. But it does give you something you can pull out and, you know, get people riled up. And I think that's becoming a thing now. I've slowly become comfortable with this idea of teams doing crazy uniform stuff. I think it's part of the college football game now.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Doing that. And so, you know, and like the blackout, I love the blackout unis.
Well, those were cool.
Oh, they are awesome.
I was skeptical, but I ended up liking them a lot. I agree with you on the royal blue. I don't know why we ever left it, and I really wish we'd go back. I don't know. It might not be ironic. That's probably a misuse of the word. But it is interesting to me that they're going to the royal blue to sell more merchandise, seeing that when we moved away from the royal blue, it was to sell more merchandise because they thought that royal blue was too much of a, you know, too much of an outlier color.
Really, you know what would really help if we went to a dark blue and added a tan stripe? Because that's the color of cougars.
Yes, yes, it's true.
That was the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Hey, I was at that news conference as a reporter when they announced the news.
That's just silly.
It was.
How can you say that? With a straight face.
It was a bizarre deal. And then I can't remember if it was actually in the news conference or as we were sitting around talking with the administration afterwards where they asked them about, well, it looks a lot like Utah State. And, oh, boy, did the administration officials get really defensive. Oh, no, it's a totally different blue.
It's not.
Well, it was different, but...
Listen,
I mean, it was close enough that...
Listen, go to the BYU website and open up the announcement for the BYU-Utah State thing. And then cover up the BYU logo and just look at the Utah State logo on that blue. I think it's exactly the same.
Oh, I am doing what you just said.
Now, granted, I'm not any aficionado, but I've got a friend of mine who's a Utah State alum who gives me a hard time about that constantly. Oh, you guys took our blue, huh? Like, we're the real dark blue. You guys are like the fake dark blue team.
Oh.
He talks about it all the time.
They're a little darker, though, dude.
Ah, sure. Whatever.
They're a little darker. But
okay. All right. Hey, toting the company line there.
Hey.
Attaboy.
Company line? I don't work for anybody. We do this for free, for heaven's sake.
I'm saying.
No one will even become our sponsor. So anyway, Matt,
well,
we both
Adidas
agree.
Should, after I gave them a shout out for that hat. We both own one.
How about Dr. Pepper?
That's gross. Actually, Dr. Pepper is pretty
delicious. Good. That's great. All right. So let's talk, Matt, about – we had previewed a lot of the team already. So let's preview the defense. We're going to do it all right now. Bam, bam, bam. Are you ready?
Awesome.
Okay, so let's start with the defensive backs. We've talked about this in the past. We lost one potential depth on the defensive backs to the Major League Baseball draft. So let's talk about the defensive backs. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being extremely comfortable, 1 being hide the women and children, how do you feel about this defensive backfield that as least as it exists right now?
7.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, you think I'm high?
We'll get to my point in a minute, so I shouldn't have reacted so emotionally. I'm sorry, let me rewind. 7, interesting. Tell me more.
No, go ahead. I know, I really do want to know what you think.
I think you're way too high. Yeah. I'm more like a 3.
Yeah, and I was. Until I started looking at a couple of things today.
Oh, no. Please tell me you're not more comfortable because of NCAA 14 and the defensive backfield has held up pretty well.
I will throw out there that Jordan Johnson has looked pretty good.
You mean number 6.
Right. Because it is not Jordan Johnson.
It is not Jordan Johnson.
But the number 6 on the team I've been playing with has done a pretty good job for me. And anyway... A couple things I noticed statistically. Okay. When you look at the interceptions from last year, now this is moving kind of slow here, but when you look at interceptions last year, okay, top interceptor, it was Sorensen with 3.
Yes.
Okay. Then
yes.
Van Noy with 2, and then a whole bunch of other people with 1. Okay. But when you think about what's coming back, You have Sorensen coming back. Van Noy obviously is coming back. You got Jordan Johnson who had a pick, for a 64-yard return last year. You've got a lot of experience. When you get into the depth chart, there's a lot of guys on here that have played.
Yes, this is true.
And that is something in the past couple of years as we've been doing this podcast, I feel like we have often said, wow, I really don't know what to expect from this defensive backfield. I don't know who these people are, or there's too many holes, or somebody got kicked off the team because of a fight at Rancheritos, or whatever it was. Like, I feel like there are less questions around who these players are and what they're capable of than there have been in the past. And I think that leads to some cynicism, because we look at it and we're like, we know that he struggles as the field corner. We know that it's something that needs to be addressed because we've seen it. But he's also a year older, and he's got a little bit more experience under his belt. And he's got, I feel like, good pieces around him in other spots on the defense to help solve that. So that's really where I'm at with the defensive backfield and why I would say a 7. And I feel really good about Sorensen. I feel really good about Sorensen. I think he's going to have a real big year.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't feel great about them. Now, granted, I didn't feel great about them last year, and they played, granted, a different group. Though, you know, Sorensen is the same, and Johnson played quite a bit last year. I don't feel real comfortable with them. If it ends up being a very good unit, I'm not going to be shocked, though. How's that?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be shocked. But I do worry that we lack a little bit of speed, and I think against, you know, some of the better passing teams we face this year, I feel like there's a potential to exploit this group. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. So
the big thing, what Bronco's always done to overcome that is schemes.
Yes. Well, I don't know if he's always overcome
that's
that.
That's what he's always tried to overcome with is schemes.
Yes. Agreed. So moving up closer to the line of scrimmage, we have a linebacker group. Same question, Matt. 1 to 10, comfort level is these guys are rock solid. Number 1 is, let's just say there'll be a bunch of holes in the middle of the field. Where's your comfort level?
5.
Oh, my. What is We are.
Oh, right. I'm low. I know I'm low.
You're way low. Why are you so low on this group? I'm totally stoked about this.
Listen.
I like Unga. I like. I mean, Vannoy, of course, is awesome. I think Hadley will be good. I think the spot where Beck is probably penciled in right now. That's where I have the biggest doubt. I do worry about depth with this group,
mm-hmm.
but I would say more like a 7.
Depth is a huge concern, in my opinion, with this group. It makes Agreed. Me very, very nervous. Vannoy is a beast. Okay, no question about that. Maybe the best linebacker in the country. Okay? Hadley, I think, is really good. Unga has done very well, especially in the beginning of the 2014 season on NCAA for me.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's just a video game, dude.
It's just a video game, yes. Can we get to real scouting reports?
The reason I say a 5 here is I feel great about Vannoy. I feel decent about Hadley, and I feel like the two spots in between them are question marks. And so I'd say Vannoy and Hadley combined with those two question marks kind of puts me at about a 50-50 split. Because once you get past, let's say Vannoy, I mean, maybe I'm jinxing this, but if you lose Vannoy, what happens to this linebacker core?
Yeah, but, I mean, he's the best player on your defense. If you lose him, I understand what you're
dominant,
saying.
And he's a dominant, in a rare way, a dominant defensive player. So right, if you lose a guy like him, your whole defense is in trouble.
But that's true every year. If you have an elite player like that, it's almost, unless you're Florida or Alabama, nobody has the depth to absorb a loss like that. To me, the more important question is, if Unga or Beck do not play well, is there anyone behind them that could play well? Right? There's no one that's going to replace Vannoy.
No,
but if Unga stinks, you know, is there anybody else? Or do you just have to put it, does he just have to stay out there?
You know, I think theoretically you could put Jorgensen in or something with one of these guys, but I don't know that there's going to be big shifts or changes in talent between the people on these lists.
Well, and that's the thing is with a lot of these guys, we haven't seen them play, so it's hard to know,
right?
It's hard to know who on this group, and it could be somebody we're not even talking about who emerges as a viable option. You know, Vannoy is not going to maybe have as much space as he had last year because no Ansa to create some of the havoc. Though I think that might be overrated. I mean, Vannoy put up pretty good numbers the couple years before that, and he had no Ansa wreaking havoc, you know, on the defensive line or linebacker, wherever Ansa would line up last year. So, okay, we're slight disagreement on both units so far. So let's move up the line of scrimmage to the defensive line, where I think we have a pretty good idea who the starters are going to be. This may be, in some ways, at least for two of the positions, kind of a given on a couple of these guys. So Matt, again, 1 to 10, your comfort level, where are you at with this group?
Oh, 7. A high 7.
A high 7?
I'm gonna go with a high 7 there.
Oh my gosh. You are playing politics today. I'm with you at a 7. So I'm with you at a 7. I feel very good about Kafusi. I feel very good about Manu Maliuna.
He's been around since 2007, and you still are stumbling on his name?
I know. I'm terrible at names. On the right side of that defensive line, I don't know what to expect as much.
Yeah, hello.
But I also think we've got a lot of depth, actually. Some big dudes that could potentially come in and play. So I think this is actually, ironically, I thought this was going to be a weak unit, but as I've looked at it and read about them, not weak, I should say, lack of depth, I actually think they're going to be able to move rest guys and move guys in and out and not have major drop-offs. How do you feel about that and the depth?
I feel decent about the depth. I feel really good about Manu Maliuna and Kafusi. You know, Manu Maliuna is best known for blocking the field goal in 2007 against UCLA, right? He will be remembered for that for
some
the rest
of our
fans.
Some of our fans are so young they didn't even see that game. He's been on
they
the
need
team
to go,
so long.
They need to go back and watch it. But in 4 games last year before he got hurt, he recorded 2 sacks. And I think that, you know, barring an injury, I think he could have a really big year on the defensive line for us. He's got, I
totally agree,
obviously oodles of experience. He's like 40 years old. I mean, he's been around a long time. And I feel really good about him. I also, you know, Kafusi as a true freshman came in last year and really made some noise. You know, he did some. I'm losing my stats here. What did he have? 4.5 sacks,
something like that.
As a true freshman, played in all 13 games.
Not bad.
Okay,
not,
I mean,
bad.
That's a lot of good experience, and he tackled some people playing basketball as well.
Well,
so,
he might have had one of the best fouls ever, with and then yelling on the top of Olenek. That was pretty awesome.
But he's,
I mean, I'm sorry, that was terrible, pretty, and he shouldn't have done it. It was really
but,
bad.
Obviously he's very talented, and you know that his dad has been on him, or his, anyway, it's his uncle, isn't it?
It's his uncle.
His dad uncle. Has probably been on him anyway, but you know that. You know he's put in time. You know that he's going to come back this fall better prepared, but more familiar with the system, and more ready to go than he was a year ago. So I feel really good about the defensive line. Well, on the other side, yeah, I'm a little bit nervous there. But, you know, when you look at some of the people that are coming in, you know, you look into that depth chart, I think that there's reason to feel good about the depth. That's why I would say a high 7. I don't want to get out of control. And what's crazy is that I realize now that am I the least comfortable between all three units with the linebackers? That's
yes.
Insane.
I know.
That's just not right.
That
like,
doesn't
I've,
make
I've,
any
I'm
sense.
I'm doing
to
it wrong, right? I mean, that's just not right.
Yeah, especially when the best player on our entire team is, I guess you could say Hoffman in the running for that, but is in that unit. But I understand why you feel that way. There is a lot of question marks and a definite lack of depth that I understand where your head's at. I don't think you're any more idiotic about that than you usually are about other stuff.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear.
Yeah. So hopefully that makes sense. So Matt, we are about out of time, so a couple of things. Next week we'll be on. We already have a guest scheduled, Bill Connolly of SB Nation, who's been on the podcast a couple times to provide kind of an outsider perspective on the Cougars and also some overall thoughts on the season. Of course, you can email us, adam@loyalcougars.com or matt@loyalcougars.com. We've gotten a couple emails lately. Appreciate those, including one we're going to talk about a lot next week in our expectations for the season as far as what we think the chances are it could be a special season. The other thing, of course, is you should be following all of the preseason coverage at vanquishthefoe.com. We've got some great pieces up there. Some awesome things are planned for this season, and I think you guys will be well served by going to that website. And, of course, you can tweet at us @BYU_RiseShout. Matt, any other thoughts before we take off?
No, I can't wait for the season to get here. Because
yes.
What happens is the number of games I play on a weekly basis of NCAA 14 will slowly increase over the next couple of weeks until the season starts, and then there's a pretty steep drop. And I need real football.
Yes, yes, as do we all, Matt. As do we all. So I'm very excited about this season. I think, I just talked with Greg, and there's some, every week is, except for maybe one or two on the schedule, there's some intrigue or excitement with the matchup. And
oh, there's great games.
It's just, and it's going to be that way the whole time. And I just, as Greg said, I feel the same way. I just hope they're good enough that it's still exciting in November, as opposed to depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Because if we hit November and we've
only
got like three or four
wins.
Way to
be the wet blanket in August.
I'm just saying, if we hit November with 3 to 4 wins, it's going to be kind of depressing.
Yeah, that's true. But who talks about that now?
I don't know. Me?
Apparently you do.
Me? Oh, and one other thing, Matt, is have you Have you read the book Ready Player One?
No.
Probably not. So it's a sci-fi book about the future or whatever. But the entire thing...
Shocked that I've not read this one.
Yes, shocked. But it's a video game book, actually. But about, you know... Anyway, I'm not going to explain the whole book. But...
Of course you're not. It's just going to get more embarrassing.
I've been reading it... Oh, shut up. I've been reading it for the past week and a half, and I just finished it last night. It is filled with references to 80s songs, movies, and video games.
Oh, that's actually pretty funny.
Because it goes into the plot. But anyway, I was just thinking, I was missing our old podcasts where we made references to the 80s and the 90s.
Those were good times.
Those were good times. Those were good times. And if some of our listeners are wondering what I'm talking about, you can go down and listen to our podcasts that are numbered in the 80s and 90s. And hear about that. But Matt, I think we need some themes. So if any of the listeners have any ideas for themes of a podcast, a movie to quote, or some type of way to definitely weave in other things, I think we should do that in the future. So
yeah, I had a good time. And clearly by people's responses, I was better at it than you were. So
wow,
any opportunity I have to show my prowess over you in anything, I'll take it.
Well, it happens so rarely, so I understand you wanting to grasp to it. Softball served,
and there you go. Yeah, that one was my fault.
Yeah, that was your fault. You're not very good at.
I did not serve that one up very well at all.
So, anyway,
not work out in my favor.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. Thank you for downloading. We'll be back again next week, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!